Alrighty. Hey guys, what's up? And welcome back to Crime and Tea. If you're new here, welcome. So glad to have you here. And if not, hey, thanks for coming back. In case you didn't know, I am your host, Crystal, and today I will have a very special guest with me. My girl, Natalie, will be covering the story with me today.
Hi.
So we work at a hair salon together and we have become great friends in our time there. So, you know, we thought we would experiment and give this a go. So welcome, Natalie.
Yay.
Thank you.
Today's case will be a little more well known, but maybe we can shed light on some details that may be unknown to you. We will be going into the case of Herman Webster Mudgett, better known as H.H. Holmes. So without further ado, grab your tea, coffee, or something cozy, and let's get into it.
Okay, so H.H. Holmes, America's first serial killer, born Herman Webster Mudgett. Now, first off, let's just talk about that name, okay? Are we surprised that the man ended up with a violent
He's got a future? Terrible name. I'm sorry.
They started him off on a bad foot, and it led... I'm sure it was the cause of some of his bullying, which I will get into later, but Herman Webster Mudgett, bummer. Born May 16th, 1861, in the small town of Gilmanton, New Hampshire. Born to, now this may be where the unfortunate name comes from, Theodate Page Price and Levi Horton Mudgett. Now, dad's name, I mean...
Wait, which one's dad and which one's mom
precisely,
again?
Precisely. Precisely. Theodate. Not Theodora. I looked at multiple sources just to make sure this wasn't Theodorette. Some bizarre typo at first because it's such an odd name for a female. But her name
It sounds
was
so
Theodate
masculine. I mean, not that a name needs to sound
Price.
Masculine, but it's funny.
Well, the habit of the times was you're born... and you're a girl, so part of your name is your mother's name, you know, whatever that may
be. Yeah, that's right. They like
versa,
to do a lot of,
male.
Like, incorporating of everybody's names into, like, one thing.
Yeah. And then his siblings, again, like, his siblings, Ellen, Arthur, and Henry. Very normal names.
And you get Herman. Sounds like
bastard.
A little monster underneath the bed.
So, that's how he came into this world. He was born, like I said, to Theodate and Levi. They were a semi-affluent family, probably from Theodate's family. That's why her name is so bougie. A devout Methodist affluent family, and his father, Levi Horton, who was a violent alcoholic. But a lot of men were at the time.
Yeah, it was just like a common running theme.
Yeah. So, his childhood, it is said that he was an intelligent, normal child until one fateful day. There is this incident that happened in his childhood, aside from the assumed bullying, just based on his name. And if you look at some pictures of this guy, he was kind of goofy looking, you know. One fateful day, the bullies... forced him to rub up against a skeleton that was in his
Is that what happened?
Office.
I could never, like,
yes.
I understood there was, like, an interaction with the skeleton.
There is so much documentation just on this one instance. And let me talk about why, you know? So are we familiar with Freud and Freudian psychology?
Somewhat.
So basically there's a formula that was tapped here.
Mm-hmm.
He had a phobia. He was terrified.
Yeah, I knew he was, like, afraid of it.
They scared him. He had a massive phobia. In a very traumatizing manner, all his peers, all these bullies, they forced him to face this phobia. And at his age, it may have caused the phobia, the trauma triggers, like, a psychosex result. And he then becomes fixated with the source of phobia.
Mm-hmm.
So the traumatic incident, as much as it disturbed and traumatized him, it also slightly aroused him.
Mm.
And it began this morbid fixation with
death.
Yeah. because it triggered that. So that, you know, that's Freud.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, no, it's crazy,
so
actually.
There's whole literature on the psychology behind what this impact had on him. As a matter of fact, there was a police officer that knew him as a child and said that he thinks that this is where it began. This is where his fixation with death began. And from there, he began operating on animals. They all use the term operating because he wanted to be a doctor and isn't
okay. Trying to make it sound coy, like,
you know,
I'm operating. I'm not just slicing these animals into
you
bits.
Know. So we've got a childhood that is riddled with physical abuse and bullying, which leads to a morbid curiosity with violence and
because you
want
to understand why everybody else is doing it. To a degree,
and
at the
I
beginning.
Think there's an adrenaline rush associated with it, too, you know, that he might be striking at. So his parents, I mentioned, were both Methodists. Now, Methodists are kind of gnarly, and they believe in very strict punishment. His mom was also a former school teacher. And, you know, back in the day, the school teachers, like, I mean, they kind of
they were not nice. They were
they
not nice.
They sort of beat you a little bit.
And get you with the ruler, like...
So,
they had a stick, didn't they?
So, yes. And then she's married to this sort of violent man, but who is also religious. So she seems to have, like, kind of an okay stance on physical punishment. And maybe that's, you know, why it's you know, said that he was abused so much. I guess she was kind of accustomed to that type of punishment, so she let it roll by, you know. But there's a bit that comes from some unnamed sources as well as Holmes's own story.
Yeah.
That sometimes punishment would include starvation, isolation, and there's one story about how his father would reportedly hold a kerosene-soaked rag over the mouth of the child who was being naughty, noisy, crying, screaming.
Because that
so
help.
Like when I was digging up this, you know, at first the stuff that comes out of Holmes's mouth, like, okay, like, did your mom ever spank you and then you went to school and you were like, my mom beat me.
Like bragging about it almost.
Making it sound like you're abused when you really aren't, you know?
Yeah. Trying to make yourself a
show. So starvation. Does that mean like going to bed without supper?
Or
which a lot of parents
yeah.
would do when they got mad at children?
Or is that
or
like you didn't
like,
eat for a whole like day or two?
You
like
get scraps like a dog.
Yeah.
So I wondered about that and it was hard to discern that, you know. So
yeah,
I
well it's hard because it's so old.
And then isolation. What, timeout?
Yeah.
Like or is that an exaggerated version of timeout? But then this kerosene bit, I saw it in more than one source.
Okay.
And it's so specific, you know, holding
that
a,
it had to have happened
separately.
At least a fair few bit of times.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't just a figment.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's where I was like, okay. So yeah, I'm going to go with he was in fact abused. He's not just being a narcissist and trying to, you know, make it seem that way. So when his dad would come home drunk and punish him for his shortcomings or what have you, he would find refuge in the woods. That's where he would hide and that's where he would dissect his animals.
Super! Dissecting animals in the woods.
Fun fact. Serial killers are actually 6 times more likely to have experienced physical abuse in their childhood than the average person.
Yes, they are. And that's why we feel so terrible for them as children. And then they become the adults that they are. And then we don't like them. And don't feel bad for them.
No.
Made some bad life decisions. Got bad life decisions.
Other people who are abused. And subject to violence. And
that make
substance abuse in their
great
childhood.
Great things of their lives.
That do not. But, you know, that goes into, you know, that goes into psychology and
how people handle emotional distress. All of it. It's a lot.
Which is being flipped. And, you know, I mean,
you're in control now.
Hmm?
Yeah.
So this animal dissection was one thing. And it's talked about by a couple of people. So clearly they knew that this weird Herman kid went into the woods and, like, sliced up animals. But, you know, I guess he was playing doctor. But there is a few stories about one childhood friend of Holmes's named Tom, who died while they were playing together in these woods that he loved so much. Him and Tom were exploring an abandoned house, and Tom fell off the landing.
Mm.
Now, one source alleges that the cops who investigated the situation did notice, and they don't have forensics or anything like that, so the only thing they noticed, I guess, would be his footprints.
Mm-hmm.
They did notice that he was standing close enough to the boy that he could have pushed him.
Okay.
So, he's tearing up animals. His friend says something smart. He gets mad and pushes him. Or maybe he's just curious and wants to know what would happen. I mean, he's a kid and has those random kid curiosities, like what's going to happen. But he's a disturbed kid. So his kid curiosities could very well have
led him.
Led to what happens if I push this person.
Yeah.
Like, there are normal children that probably think that. And then
Oh,
no, I don't.
Yeah, I shouldn't
do that. You wonder what would happen if you just chop that guy's head off, you know? Stab him, you know? I mean, we've all had road rage.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you don't. But
no,
this kid,
because you have self-control and morals of some sort.
It's not known whether or not he did that, but it was an interesting tidbit that I thought was worth mentioning.
Mm. Good stuff.
Yes. So, he enters into teenagehood, goes through high school. At 17 years old, he elopes with Clara Levering. In the year 1878, Clara was the daughter of a wealthy local farmer. This is New Hampshire, you know.
Yeah, farming.
This was the first of many women that Holmes would marry for money and then abandon. That was his thing. And again, like, this guy's kind of short and goofy looking. Like, he's not even...
I know, they say he is handsome, though, and I get so confused.
I look at pictures, that
and
man
I don't,
is not handsome.
I don't think he is either, but they say he is just, like,
looks
the most
like
dashing, like, wonderful, beautiful man that has ever walked on the earth, and he's so eloquent, and...
I disagree with that. I did not think that. But he has a knack for doing this. As you'll see, we get further along, winning and taking their money. It's his vibe. But Clara was the first. A year after their marriage is when he graduated high school and left for University of Michigan Medical School.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, the animal, some of that was psychosis, but a little bit of that.
I like your little motion in there.
Might have been a genuine, I know, right? It might have been a genuine medical curiosity because he did go to med school. Or chicken or the egg, he liked chopping up animals and learned that if he went to med school, he could chop up people.
Yeah. Maybe, you know? So not a bad point. Yeah, he was like, look, I can go and experiment and it's okay. Like, they're letting me do this. Mm-hmm. I'm a doctor, guys. I am a doctor. I can do this. It's legal.
No, he's not a doctor yet.
No, I know.
So, at 1880, his son Robert Levering Mudgett is born. Gave his kid a nice normal name. Poor Clara gave it to him, since by the time Robert was born, Herman had already bounced off to med school with Clara's dowry money.
Gotta go.
That's how he paid his tuition.
Mm.
At some point, that must have run out because he, in fact, meets Myrta Belknap.
Yeah, she has a weird name.
KN, so I'm going to go with Belknap, but that's her name. And he marries her as well while still married to Clara. Apparently, you can roll around doing this. I think he would go to...
He tried to get a divorce, but he wasn't able to finalize the divorce because they were being annoying.
Wasn't there.
Yeah. They wanted him to... Yeah, he was like, no, I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to do it. Like, whatever. I'm fine.
He never came back for Clara, like, pretty much. You know what I mean? Like,
he's just like, I just left. I wanted to leave.
So you probably had to elope somewhere else with Myrta. I want to say Indiana. But anyway, convinces her to give him some money so he can complete his schooling. Myrta also has a child with him. Poor Lucy. Lucy Theodatos.
So catchy.
Now you know that Herman had to have done that. Herman's mother's name was Theodate, and she sounded like a real bitch. But he followed custom and had Myrta name their child Lucy Theodate Holmes.
Sticking with it.
Even though he also abandoned them.
Yeah, you know.
But I found that interesting. The mommy issues are lurking ever so slightly underneath the text.
Yeah.
So in med school, he can't just keep marrying broads to make
Get
his way.
Med school.
So he starts procuring cadavers to study and dissect and use in his research. He would rob graves and morgues and then sell the cadavers to school for research at first,
mm-hmm.
until he discovered the insurance swindle, which apparently, like, back in the day, this was like a thing. And if any of you guys have listened to Crime and Tea, before, there's a few other cases of people taking out insurance policies on people and then, like, either knowing that they're going to die, part in their death, etc., so they can benefit from said person's death. Like, this was done.
Yeah.
Which is just so bizarre to me.
I have a whole another episode that includes a nice try at insurance fraud.
Your husband's a dick. Take out a life insurance policy and wrap it. You know, oh wait, you're a woman, you can't do that. You gotta get a man to do it for you. Get your new lover to do it for you. Probably exactly what I would have had to do back in the day.
Gotta get out of here.
So he figures this out. So what he would do was he would take out life insurance policies on people, use the names of the missing persons or even made up identities for which he had taken policies out on. And then he would disfigure or burn the corpse so he could pass it off as whomever. How did no one catch on to this?
I have no idea.
Because he did it quite a bit, okay? But like I said...
Well, because he had a bunch of aliases. He would go in there with a different name every time.
Every time, yeah.
And he wouldn't go to the same places, so they didn't catch on.
I'm sure it was like Howard Harry Munster or something.
No, he had I looked it up. I don't have the exact list here, but there is a list of all of his different names, and there's quite a large list of the names. It's like I think it's at least 10, if not more. Like, it was a lot. Just going around like a different person everywhere you go. New me, new name.
Well, one of his new names got him a really big settlement. $12,500 in the 1800s.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money right now.
I know.
It's a lot of. He must have had really bad financial skills.
I think he just spent all of his money. I don't know where. Like that. I wondered the same thing. I'm like, he's got all these.
He probably has bad financial.
But I almost think that
child.
Like
he never matured and learned money management.
But I almost think that, like, he just hoards all of his money, too. He's just like, no, I'm not giving you anything. Because he's always trying to scam everybody at everything.
He grew up in an affluent family. Right?
Yeah, so. But that doesn't have to make you greedy.
I don't think that. people who aren't born poor don't have money management skills.
Yeah.
At all.
Well, because they are used to having money
They're
all
awful.
The time.
Yeah.
And when you don't have that money all the time, things don't work out the way that you plan.
Yeah. Well, grown adults with money management skills are fucking pathetic. Sorry, in my opinion, they are. I'm going to offend people on this podcast.
It's okay. This has nothing to do with offending anybody. This is opinions. This is our opinions. And we are telling you our story the way that we feel that we've interpreted our story. So nobody be offended, okay? We are not trying to offend anybody. We are just telling you a story and trying to get through the story for you guys. Because there is a lot of, like, dark stuff in here. And there's some stuff that we have to make light of. And, you know,
yeah.
We're just here trying to... Spice it up a little bit.
Not even there yet. Well, $12,500 and he graduates med school. And I believe that's when he heads to Indiana and meets his third wife, Georgiana. Uses his new MD title to create his famous surname, Henry Hammerholm. And between his third wife, his scam money, and some odd jobs, he eventually does head for Chicago. His third wife, Georgiana, had wanted to go there as well. She had aspirations of seeing the world there. She was an educated woman, a worldly woman, 23, tall, cute, you know.
Doing her thing, living her life.
Yeah, and she probably lasted longer than most of his other wives. She was his boo thing, you know?
Yeah, she was the one that I think he was most in love with out of all
yes.
of them.
Yes, I think he had finally found himself. He had graduated college. He had, you know, mutilated some bodies.
Done his thing. He lived a little.
possibly killed some animals, you know?
No worries.
He could have very well have killed people by then already. We don't even know.
Yeah, no, there's like speculation that maybe
there's
he
a lot
was...
of speculation. I mean, the childhood murder, but I think there's a period here where he may have been playing with it.
Yeah, definitely. Figuring it out. Coming up with some sort of something.
But anyway, he is now Henry Howard Holmes. He is in Chicago with his boo thing. And looking for the next big scam.
Insurance scam.
Scam.
Where can he
trying to find his next
money.
Mark. Probably trying to find his next life. You know.
Yep.
Ridiculous. All right. And with that, I will hand it over to our lovely host, Crystal.
Alrighty. So, Carmen moves to Chicago. So in 1887, Herman Webster Mudgett got a job as an assistant at the pharmacy of Mr. and Mrs. Holcomb, located at 63rd Street and Wallace in Englewood, Chicago. He introduced himself as Dr. Henry H. Holmes, and he was very charming and good-looking. Shortly after being hired, Mr. Holton disappeared and was thought to be dead. There's a lot of, like, weirdness in, like, trying to explain what happens to, like, the husband at the pharmacy, because there's, like, certain accounts that literally just say that he was fine,
mm-hmm.
and he just lived his life, and then there's other accounts that, like, speculate that he was killed, and that's why, you know, he's not involved anymore.
Mm.
So, I don't know what side that's
he's
supposed
older,
to be on.
Right? And so, you know, I'm in, like, this young kid, so he's like, yeah, I run my business, Chucky.
So the widowed Mrs. Holton then took charge of the pharmacy from there, and it was told that the ladies became particularly fond of the pharmacy after he became employed there. Yeah, he was.
He was such a looker. Maybe men were just ugly.
I have no idea.
Then.
I
and
don't
he was
get
a looker.
It. Like, even just for a small purchase, they would seem like they would just be hanging around, wanting to talk to him, and would just stay there. The business was booming at this time, thanks to all these efforts of these ladies. And you know, he was just bringing in even more business. And so Mrs. Holton was like, yeah, this is great. You know, we're doing great.
Was
Everything's
he selling,
great.
Like ancient vibrators, you know?
I have no idea. I don't know. He was selling gold, though.
Sex pills.
The good shit. So the business was flourishing, and she was making lots of money, and everything was, you know, pretty all right. But then mysteriously, after Holmes had purchased the pharmacy for Mrs. Holton for whatever reason, they decided to, you know, do that. And then the same year, she vanished. So this is, again, going into that theory that, like, he killed them, or they...
He convinced her to sell the pharmacy to him for whatever reason.
Yeah, and
you're
then...
You're a woman, you'll get nothing. Sell it to me. You need a man to have the business.
So there's, like, cases that say that, you know, she just moved away and just didn't get a forwarding address, that her and her husband just lived on, and they were perfectly fine, all, you know, wonderful and whatnot.
But no one knows
pharmacist,
whether or not he, I mean, it seems plausible that he would just whack them both and take their business. Like,
and the guy actually was a friend of his from school. Like, he was a few years ahead of him in school, but they were, like, that's how they knew each other.
What if it was just good old-fashioned blackmailing, like he had something on them, and he wouldn't, like, let them go with it unless he got their business?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know if that's not.
So, yeah, like I said, it just says that it may have just been sensationalized for the medium at the time, because that's they were just trying to sell papers at that time, you know? They were trying to make money however they could, even if they had to squeeze a white lie in there. So anyways,
well,
it's hard to...
doesn't do that nowadays.
No, not at all. So then 2 years later, Holmes purchased the plot of land across the way from the pharmacy. He plotted on building a 3-story hotel, with businesses, a personal office for himself, and far too much room.
Yeah.
Way too much room. This would become known as the infamous Murder Castle. It was formerly known as the World's Fair Hotel because it was meant to host the patrons of the World's Columbian Exposition in 1893. So construction on the hotel began in 1887. It was initially only the 2-story building, with the first floor being a retail level and a new drugstore. And the second floor was to be apartments, but Holmes declined to pay for the architect and steel company, so they sued him in 1888. I don't know what came of that. I don't know.
You just have to go build something and not pay for it? Seriously?
Yeah.
And again, he has money.
He's so greedy. I'm telling you.
He's miserly just... little shit.
He reminds me of a Scrooge. That's how I feel about him. That's how I view him. Like, that's how I see him. So, moving along to 1892, he added the 3rd floor, telling investors and suppliers he was going to open this floor as a hotel for the exposition. And so everybody had all this faith in him that, you know, he's going to make some real money out of this, so he's going to pay us, and, you know, he's probably using another alias
and
of sorts.
Really
and
could have.
He's so, he could have.
You know, he ain't paying child support on any of these kids.
Oh, no.
He's
no,
fathered.
Not at all.
So, like...
He's got money. He has to have money. So the hotel portion was never completed, though. Furniture suppliers found their materials were going missing, and he just wasn't paying for them. You know, good old Holmes. He was constantly hiring and firing workers. It kept him from having to pay workers because he would just say he didn't think they were doing their job adequately. Yeah. All the turnover of the employees also kept anyone from really knowing the true building structure. So I don't know if that was, like, also in the works of, like, an idea of a plan for him, because he was like, I don't want anybody to know what this place looks like. I don't want anybody to know anything about this place. And so,
yeah, I'm sure.
But Holmes announced that he was now ready to rent out rooms to the tourists of the exposition. Most of the rooms on the 3rd floor were well furnished, but finding the rooms was another story. It was said to be poorly lit. The rooms were scattered about the floor in no particular order. There were dead ends and stairways that led absolutely nowhere. There were locked doors that were only openable with a key that Holmes had, which is like, why the fuck do you only have the key here? What about the groundskeeper? Nobody gets in there?
No, we know.
Oh, I know. He also had a walk-in bank vault that was modified with the inclusions of a gas pipe. The pipe was only able to be controlled through a hidden panel in Holmes' bedroom closet. fun guy.
A bank vault with a gas pipe?
Yeah. I was like, okay.
He's going to hoard all his money and then in case he has to...
I think it was just supposed to be disguised. Like, I think that was, like, what he made it look like. So that way nobody would be, like, suspicious of going in there. I think that was where that was going. The second floor was more confusing. There were approximately 51 doors and 6 different hallways, which is a lot of rooms and doors, if you ask me. 35 of these doors led to actual bedrooms, but the other rooms were airtight, lined with asbestos-coated steel plates, or they were completely soundproofed. Yeah, he did some stuff. Some of these rooms were just impractical with low ceilings, and then the gas pipe rigs that led back to the panel in his room. The rooms had peepholes, and if anyone tried to leave the room, an alarm in his room would sound. The second floor, yeah. I was like, I don't
even... They didn't leave without paying their tab.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it says that the doors would, like, lock.
Cheap shit.
Like, as soon as the people would get in there. So I guess maybe, like, as they were, like, trying to, like, figure out how to get out, he's like, oh, shit. They figured me out. I gotta go get them. So the second floor also had secret passageways, hidden closets, which had trap doors and, most unsettling, large shafts that would lead directly to the cellar. Mm-hmm. Which is just... So the cellar of the hotel is seen as almost dungeon-like in design, as well as the equipment he kept there. There was an acid tank with quicklime vats, which... Yeah, if you don't know, quicklime can be used to kill bacteria and dehydrate body, among other uses. So it basically clean. Yep. A dissection table, because, you know, he's a doctor, and a surgeon's table as well. He also ended up making a device of his own that he called Elasticity Determinator. And he claimed it could stretch people to twice their sizes, creating a race of giants. Mm-hmm. Yeah, race of giants. Upon finding...
He was short. He was just curious. There's that morbid curiosity.
Wonder what would happen. But upon finding this device later, the police compare it to a medieval torture rack. He used his equipment to dissect the bodies of his victims so he could sell their organs and bones on the black market, as well as medical institutions. Which is like, great. There's these schools that are like, yeah, this guy's legit. He's a doctor. And
well,
he's just like...
That book back.
Oh, yeah. He was buddies. He had buddies. He had friends.
It is true. Like, it was hard for them to prepare, you know, bodies that they could use for medical research. So there were a lot of unsavory characters that provided
the bodies. Definitely. They were just like, however we can get it, let's do this.
Don't tell us. Don't tell us how you got it.
One of Holmes's first murders was said to be his former mistress, Julia Smith. Holmes had hired Ned Connor to work the jewelry counter, and Julia was his wife. Connor finds out about the affair, and he quits his job and leaves Julia, as well as his daughter, Pearl, behind. Julia remained with Holmes, continuing her affair with him. But on Christmas Eve of 1891, Julia and Pearl just up and disappeared. Holmes, at a later time and point, claims that Julia had died during an abortion, but then where is Pearl? Now, it says in some instances that Pearl was chloroformed and suffocated, but some instances just say she disappeared.
I would believe he botched an abortion as well.
I do as well.
I would absolutely believe that.
But I feel like he could have done it on purpose. Yeah. Yeah, just see what happens. Well, that happened a lot back then, too. That was another thing. People, like, ooh. If you needed surgery back then, I don't know. It was like, do I just hang on to it and die that way? Or do I possibly, like, which one's a better way? Like, no, not at all. So in May? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's funny. Things all come around. And many of... In May of 1892, Emmeline Sigrand took on the task of being Holmes' secretary. It was said that she had accepted a marriage proposal from Holmes, and she just disappeared after that, which I don't know too much more on that, but, like, well, he's just got girls all over the place.
Like a French kind of name.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps.
A place to work. Just like that. So Holmes made claims that she had run off with another man. It's curious, though, that when she went missing, Holmes apparently asked for the help of two male guests to move a large, heavy trunk to the cellar. Shortly thereafter, Holmes sold a fully articulated female skeleton to a medical school.
Oh, yeah. She
went
right in that bin of acid.
Mm-hmm. So, anyways, Holmes later admitted that he locked Sigard in the vault, raped her, and killed her. He even went as far as sending her trunk with all her belongings home, but with no explanation as to where she was.
Was that necessary?
I was like, you could have just not. You could have just not. That's just left it alone.
Weird.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Side note, Holmes required all of his employees to have a life insurance policy that he would pay for as long as he was made the sole beneficiary. Sounds kind of sketchy, guys. Just a little sketchy. Like, yeah, I get health insurance for free, guys. Like, he said that I just have to, or I just have to, you know, do this, and I get to stay here and live here and da 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 da. Right? But, where did I go? Oh, there it is. So there was also a mention of Edna Van Tassel, who was believed to have also been another one of Holmes' many, probably, long
list
of victims. Edna Van Tassel. Ooh. So moving on, Holmes is working at the Chemical Bank building, which is an actual bank, in case you were wondering. I was confused, so I looked it up because I was like, what is a chemical bank? I thought it was like chemicals in a bank, it's an actual bank name.
There's an episode of Seinfeld where there's an old granny trying to cash a check at Chemical Bank. And she finds out that Chemical Bank has been closed for
20
years.
Oh, that's hilarious. He then meets Benjamin Pitzel, and they become good friends. Pitzel was a carpenter with a bit of a criminal record, so him and Holmes got along quite well. Mm. Holmes would use Pitzel as a tool for the period of time they were committing crimes together. In early 1893, small-time actress Minnie Williams moved to Chicago. There was speculation of how these two met, either at an employment office or a few years earlier in Boston. She was offered a job as a stenographer for Holmes, and she accepted. Holmes somehow managed to get Williams to transfer the deed for her property in Fort Worth, Texas, to Alexander Bond, which just so happened to be another alias for Holmes. Just hand it to me. Just give it to me. You don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. Real good care of it. So Williams transferred the deed in April of that year, and Holmes conveniently served as the notary. Because, you know, I got you. Nobody needs to know about this other than me and you.
Mm-hmm.
Holmes then, at a later point, signs the deed over to Pitzel under the alias of Benton T. Lyman. In May, Holmes and Williams said they had married and they rented an apartment in Chicago's Lincoln Park. Minnie's sister Annie comes to visit the couple. She wrote them in July. She told her aunt that she was going to go and see the world with brother Harry.
Mm-hmm.
And then Minnie and Annie were never seen alive again after July 5th, 1893.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just enough time to get two.
Mm-hmm.
Holmes and Pitzel decide on traveling around committing frauds and thefts, and this is what actually was initially landed him in prison in 1894. He was arrested for a short period of time for selling mortgaged goods in St. Louis, Missouri. He was bailed rather quickly, but he was in long enough to become acquainted with Marion Hedgepath, who was a convicted outlaw. Holmes talked over this plan to swindle an insurance company out of $10,000, which is roughly about $296,000 in today's currency.
Yeah.
He was going to take a policy out on himself and fake his death. On himself now. No, we're just, you know, we've totally foregone any sham of an operation. We're just going for it. Holmes had made a deal with Hedgepath for the name of a lawyer that would help him with this task. He would then pay a $500 commission to Hedgepath. Now remember that, because that's going to be important.
He's not going to pay anybody. He doesn't pay people.
Holmes then meets a young St. Louis attorney named Jephthah Howe. Jephthah was working under his brother, Alfonso Howe, who was never involved in any of this mess. Jephthah Howe, though, thought that Holmes's idea was amazing. He's like, yeah, this sounds great. I'm gonna get some money, you're gonna get some money, like, let's do it. So Holmes's scheme didn't go over as smoothly as he thought it would. The insurance company became suspicious of the whole ordeal, and they just refused to pay out the money. They said no.
Wouldn't you just be blacklisted on insurance companies at this point?
They don't probably communicate with each other. They're not like, hey, friend, hey, just so you know, this guy's a dick.
How many insurance companies were there in
So this really didn't faze Holmes, though. He just concocted a plan B that was the same thing, but instead he would fake his partner's death.
Yeah. Fake it.
Pitzel was in agreement with the plan and agreed to fake his death so his wife could collect the $10,000 policy, which was to be split with Holmes and Jephthah. So they could, they came up with the plan that, Pitzel would become P.F. Perry, an inventor, and he would then be killed and disfigured in a lab explosion. Holmes was supposed to find a cadaver to act as the body double to Pitzel. This, however, was not how things transpired. Instead, Holmes actually killed Pitzel by knocking him out with chloroform and then setting his body on fire. Holmes tried to make it look like a suicide with the use of chloroform, but later in his trial, it was determined the chloroform was actually administered after he had set him on fire. To make it look like it was a suicide.
And it was like, he had no problem, like, acquiring cadavers.
No.
You know, all this time. So he could have done it. Like, he really did probably just, he's gotten too close. He knows too much.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is.
Time.
He's compromising him at this
and
point.
And I need money again, somehow.
So Holmes then went on to coerce Mrs. Pitzel, telling her that her husband was hiding away in London and that he needed custody of three of her five children for some reason or another. Like,
this woman.
Yeah, just take my three kids with you. Uncle Harry's going to take you.
Maybe she didn't want the kids.
I have no idea.
Because I can't imagine any other reason why this wouldn't be sus to you and why you would agree to this.
Exactly.
Like, good God, I know it was sort of being
London. Crazy. In reality, he took the children, it seemed like, to cover himself because he had taken all the insurance money for himself. Yeah. He began traveling with the three children, all the while traveling on a similar path with Mrs. Pitzel. So, like, he was, like, mating up with her when he was supposed to be with the kids. Ow. That was my hand. But, like, he would, like, basically have them move along, like, a similar path line, just, like, a little further away from each other, and he would just, like, oh, yeah, everything's fine. And then he'd go over there and tell them, oh, yeah, everything's fine. You know, I sent your letter to your mother, and she, she's just not responding. Well, he was just saying that they're fine and everything's fine. And then the kids were being told pretty much the same thing. And, you know, the oldest was writing letters, she thought, to her mother and mailing them, but she just wasn't receiving responses. Mm-hmm. But he just intercepted all those letters. Mm-hmm. So he began traveling with the three children. Oh, yeah, I already went over that. He continued telling her that her husband was just hiding and lying about the children. Meanwhile, Holmes' wife is none the wiser to all of this mayhem. She has absolutely no idea about all of the shit that this man is doing out there in the world. So Holmes later confessed to killing Alice and Nellie, two of the Pitzel children, by forcing them into a large trunk. Trigger. Just a little trigger. Just because this is, like, this is a little rough. This is children. Like, this is not nice. Mm-hmm. So he locks them inside this trunk. He then drilled a hole into the large trunk and put a hose through the hole, attaching the other end to a gas line, and suffocated the girls. Jeez. And then I'm not sure if the kids were already in the nude, but it says that he buries them nude in the cellar rental that he had in Toronto. Mm-hmm. He also at this point kills Howard Pitzel, the last of the three children. He was, so like I said, he chopped up and dismembered and burned the body in the fireplace. They found the teeth, the bones,
like,
in the chimney.
Why'd you even take the children? What was the point?
I have no idea. Like, why did they have to be involved at all?
It's just so manic. And the only thing I can think of is, like, you know, the stories about his father are true. And somehow he's like, you know, maybe his siblings didn't endure the same level of abuse that he did. And he's somehow, you know, in his mind, making them pay
for
these other children.
Yeah,
like,
for what, everything that happened.
Stuff
yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, it could be.
The kid thing seems so, like, such a jump.
Yeah.
And weird. And
it was weird. It was very odd. It was like, just, that wasn't his normal shtick.
It's like extra X.
But, so this is where
the side of crazy sauce.
Holmes's greed kind of bites him in the ass.
Good.
In 1894, the police were tipped off by none other than Marion Hedgepath, mm-hmm. who Holmes had neglected to pay off.
I know.
He was finally arrested in Boston on November 17th, 1894. They held Holmes on an outstanding warrant for horse theft in Texas, since the authorities at this point were just speculating. But Holmes seemed like a flight risk, poised to leave with his third wife, who still had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
She's just oblivious the whole time. So the police discovered the bodies of Alice and Nellie in July 1985. This is when the police began investigating Holmes' house in Englewood. Now, this is where some of the stories differ. It said that in a lot of the claims, the murder castle are just sensationalized news and that there was no conclusive evidence to support any claims of torture and madness. In my opinion, the evidence just wasn't there. He was able to get rid of the bodies. It was like selling candy on the corner.
With thousands
like,
of rooms like that, there legit could be like things that they couldn't even find.
Well, there's that. And then the fact that like he is this doctor. And so he is like, you know, cleaning these bodies up. And he's selling these to the black market. Like, you know, the organs and stuff. And then he's taking the bodies and just selling them off to the schools. And they are, I mean, yeah, it's just wild. So, I mean, I think that you can't really say that nothing happened. Just because you can't prove that nothing happened either.
And who are these people that are coming to the World's Fair? They're coming from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be looked for a while. They're not going to be missed. They could have easily just disappeared in there.
Yep. And like, he would. He would take these women home. People would complain that, like, he was taking people into their houses or into the house and they wouldn't come out.
Let any of the women be single, questionable, whatever. Then they're labeled as possibly being a
Yeah, it's crazy. So,
of course, no one knows their
nobody cares. Nobody cares, especially because they're not from there. So it's not important to them. In October 1895, Holmes is put on trial for the murder of Benjamin Pitzel. He was found guilty and sentenced to death. At that point, it was evident Holmes had killed the children as well. He also proceeded to confess to 27 murders in total and 6 counts of attempted murder. He was paid $7,500. $7,500 he was paid, which is equal to $230,000 today, for his confession to the Hearst newspaper. This confession was, though, found to be mostly nonsensical information. Shocking. He just wanted your money.
And let that be a lesson to you. Do not ever stiff someone. Because if you got any dirt, that person that you stiffed might be the person that comes back and rats your ass out. So don't go around not paying people like this guy. That's ultimately kind of what
that's what fucked him over.
Which I'm not surprised. You can't just rip that many people off and
I think
have
you're
going to
get away with it forever.
Come for you.
It's just not plausible. But the police were only able to confirm 9 of the supposed 27 victims. There is, however, speculation that the number of victims can range from 20 all the way to 100 or more.
Yeah, because most of them got chopped up.
Yep.
Completely taken apart, you know? And
they just weren't there.
There aren't remains.
No. I mean, there are, but they're just not here.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, and there's no way to really track that down. You can't. I mean, I guess you could if you had records of all that stuff, but I doubt he kept records of that stuff. He probably dealt with it and, you know, got rid of whatever else went with it. But on May 7th, 1896, at the Moyam Singh prison, which is also the Pennsylvania prison, was hanged. It was set up to the monument. Or no, I'm sorry. It was set up to the moment he died. He remained calm. He was just like, yep, what's the good? Holmes asked that his coffin be buried 10 feet down and be cemented into the ground. He was worried grave robbers would try to steal his body and dissect it.
Were his wishes?
Oh, yeah, they did it. They did it because, hold on.
I'm like, fuck your wishes. We're going to leave you out in the open so all the brothers and sisters of the animals you dissected can come and eat your body.
So.
This is for people.
And here's another little warning for you guys, because this is not exactly pleasant to depict in your brain. So Holmes, upon being hung, his neck did not snap, as it should normally.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, he slowly strangled to death, twitching for more than 15 minutes before he was finally pronounced dead 20 minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was how Henry H. Holmes lived his life. But before we get out of here, I have a couple other fun little tidbits. Wait a second. They actually ended up having to exhume his body.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is why we know that the cement is there, because it was a production to get his body out, because there was speculation that he had gotten away, and he didn't actually get away. They checked it, and his body was said to be remarkably well preserved because of the cement keeping all of the air out and everything, which is like crazy. But they were able to test it, and they were like, nope, that's him. He's here.
Okay.
So, some other information. Marion Hedgepath, who was pardoned for his info on Holmes, was shot and killed by police officer Edward Jabberuck on New Year's Eve 1909. Oh. There was a holdup at a Chicago saloon that he just happened to be at.
Bummer.
Also, Patrick Quaylen, who was the former caretaker of the castle, commits suicide on March 7th, 1914. He was found in his bedroom with a note that read, "I couldn't sleep." Yeah. His relatives said he had been hallucinating for quite some time. They said that he was haunted. The castle was then mysteriously lit on fire in August of 1895. According to the New York Times, there were two men seen entering the building between 8 and 9 p.m. Shortly thereafter, they were seen fleeing, running rapidly away. There were several explosions. The castle went up in flames.
No one knows who they were.
Nobody knows who they were. But it said under the back steps of the building, a half-filled gas can was found by the investigators. The fire didn't completely destroy the building, though, and it remained in use until 1938 when it was torn down. There was still all those people that were running space in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was massive.
Yeah, it was a big thing.
And
then lastly, there were some rumors and allegations that Holmes actually had gotten away, like I said, and so they did the exhumation of his body, and they found out with his teeth, his dental records, that, you know, that was him. But I hope you all enjoyed our rendition of Henry Webster Mudgett, a.k.a. H.H. Holmes. Thanks for hanging out with me, Annette. If you would like to see any pictures related to this case, you can head over to my Instagram at crimeandtea. You can also feel free to shoot me a Gmail at crimeandteapodcast@gmail.com with suggestions, comments, and whatever you want to chat about. You can also follow me at Anchor at the link below, and donate with the Anchor link below as well. I appreciate any donations, but they are never required. I thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be here, and all of the links will be listed below as usual. Till next time's tea. Bye, guys.
Bye.